I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Today, it's Midday on ethics. A Chinese scientist says that he edited the genes of twin girls before they were born late last year. Editing the human genome is prohibited around the world, including in China. If this alarming news is true, it raises fears about the ramifications and unintended consequences, not just for the newborns, but for future generations. Dr. Jeffrey Kahn of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics joins me. Plus, the legendary pianist Leon Fleischer. At age 90, he's still gracing the concert stage. He joins me to talk about his extraordinary career and his concerts this weekend with the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Hall. Coming up a little later in our program today, a conversation with one of the greatest classical pianists in history. Leon Fleischer is still performing at the age of 90, and he'll join me in a bit to talk about the concerts that he's playing this weekend with the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. But first, it's Midday on Ethics with Dr. Jeffrey Kahn of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics. Today, we'll explore some of the ethical issues raised by the explosive case of a Chinese researcher named He Jiangqiu. In late November, he announced the birth of twin girls, Lulu and Nana, who are the world's first gene-edited humans. Most countries, including China, ban human gene editing, and scientists around the world have strongly denounced what he's done and the claims that he is making. If you'd like to join our conversation with Dr. Jeff Kahn, our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780, our email, midday@wipr.org. You can find us on Twitter, @MiddayWIPR, and you can also check us out on the WIPR Facebook page, which, thanks to our friend Jamila Krimple, we are streaming our conversation there. Jeff Kahn, Happy New Year. Good to see you.
Happy New Year to you. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Always good to see you. But, you know, this story is huge. You were at a conference in Hong Kong when the scientist, Dr. He, started to explain the claim that he had made a couple of days before. Before we talk about him and that experience, let's begin with what he claims he has done.
So, The story broke, as you say, in Hong Kong in advance of an international summit to discuss how to best guide the use of this new technology, human applications of genome editing. And his claim is that he used this technique to create a human embryo, in multiple human embryos, it turns out, that have a particular mutation that would protect the individual born from this embryo from infection with HIV. So it turns out that some people are born with this particular mutation. It's called CCR5 Delta 32. And if you have two copies of it, then you are resistant, maybe not totally resistant, but certainly more resistant than if you don't have it, to HIV infection. And he claims that he modified the embryos that these two twin girls were ended up being born from with this mutation so that they would be resistant to HIV once they grew up and were sexually active or exposed. That's the claim. It has not been assessed by any independent third parties. It's not been published in any peer-reviewed biomedical or scientific journal. The only information that has been shared publicly or privately, so far as I know, was at this meeting in Hong Kong. So there's a lot of questions, a lot of consternation as a result, and a lot of concern internationally, as you said in the intro.
I mean, there's all sorts of aspects of the ethical dimensions of this, but to make clear what you've just said, he did not publish this in a peer-reviewed medical journal or scientific journal, which is the way you guys communicate with each other. He puts this on a YouTube video,
yes,
like 2 days before this conference.
Correct. In concert with two articles that were published, one by the Associated Press. Actually, that was the second one. The first was the MIT Technology Review broke the story. That happened the day before this meeting in Hong Kong. The AP story followed very quickly after the MIT Tech Review story, so both in journalistic outlets, and they were just reported as journalism. And then he presented some slides that had the information that would typically be reported in the biomedical literature, and that still has not happened. The interesting questions about whether it even could be published in any reputable peer-reviewed journal because of the ethics of his doing what he claimed he did. So we may never actually see it published in the biomedical literature, which is both maybe appropriate but also very problematic for how to understand what happened and how to assess the science just as a matter of objective. Did he do what he said, and what are the implications? Did it work? How do we understand to go forward, even if it was done in ways that were not acceptable?
Sure, because the main tenet of your work, you being all scientists, is reproducibility and, you know, and peer review, so people can examine it and say, whoop, that doesn't seem right, or this doesn't seem right, or yes, I tried this as well, and it does seem right. Let's also be clear, these babies, there's two of them, twin girls, they were born in China. They would have been born anyway. It's not like the genome editing that he did caused them to be born in the first place, right? What he did, or what he claims he did, is to have them born with this particular genetic component, which would keep them resistant to HIV. It's not that he created these babies out of thin air, right?
Right. It's an interesting point, though. So there's a point at which you would say certain kinds of editing of the genome might actually alter the identity of the person eventually born, right? Than would have been born if the genome had not been edited. So the way the technique works, or the way he used the technique, was that at the moment of fertilization, he injected not only one sperm into one egg, but the cassette that did the genome editing at the same moment as fertilization. So as the embryo was created, it was also being edited. It's an interesting sort of, you know, a philosophical question. Did he change the identity of the embryo or the person that would come from the embryo through this sort of edit? I think, like you said, the answer is no in this particular case, but one could easily imagine a different kind of editing of the genome that would indeed alter the identity of the person that would come from the embryo, altered versus unaltered.
So this technology is available. I mean, it sounds like he is not the only person in the world who could have done this, right? People have known this is CRISPR. We've talked about CRISPR, which is an acronym for this machine that does this, right?
Yep.
So to anybody's knowledge, I mean, he's making this claim, and as you've said, it can't be confirmed, first of all, that he actually has done this, but and that's a separate issue. But to anybody's knowledge, has anybody else tried this before? I mean, is this the very first time?
It's the first time that there has been an implantation of embryos that were altered in this way into a woman's body that there's a claim resulted in live births. To be very clear, Dr. He actually has been a part of the CRISPR genome editing community for a number of years and has disclosed that he has been working on in vitro, that is in the petri dish, human embryos, working to introduce edits into the human embryos. What he didn't disclose was that he was taking those embryos that he had so edited and implanting them into a woman's body. That step, so far as we know, had never been done before, and we hope since. In the course of the discussion in Hong Kong at this meeting that we've referred to, he was asked numerous questions, among them, how many embryos have you edited this way? And the answer was something in the low 30s. And the second question is, how many women are pregnant or have you tried to get pregnant using those 30-some-odd embryos? And he would not answer that second question. So I think it's probably the case that the two live births are not the only attempt, and maybe not the only pregnancies. We don't know. And it's going to be very difficult to find out without some kind of independent investigation from outside of China that is given access to the data.
And what are the prospects for that? I mean, how will people determine whether or not what he is saying is truthful and whether or not what he's saying, you know, actually did happen? I mean, the fact of these babies must be provable, right? I mean, is he the only one that knows their location? I mean, they've got names, or they're at least the nicknames they've been given, Lulu and Nana. Do we know the mother, the father, where they live? Do we know anything about these children or their parents?
No, well, and of course, radio is not good for visual, but I'm shaking my head vigorously here. We don't know any of those things. and Lulu and Nana are merely their nicknames. We only know that they come from a particular northern province, but that's all he has disclosed. That's where he has done his work. But to answer the question about how will we know, will require some independent group of scientists to have access to everything that they need, including the babies themselves, so they can be tested through blood tests and their genome tested to see whether the edit that has been claimed has actually been achieved, and much more information about how many other couples are involved, and how many other embryos are involved, and what the status of those embryos might be. So lots of questions without a lot of answers, and not a clear path forward to answer your question about how we might manage this. It's a big part of what the discussion that's going on in my world is about right now. How does the international community respond in order to take positive advantage of these techniques and this technology and avoid this kind of clearly unethical step forward?
So this all happened right around Thanksgiving. Just after Thanksgiving, the AP in this review at MIT broke this story of Dr. Hayes' claims. Then he appeared at this conference, and you were there. What was that like when he walked out on that stage and started to discuss this bombshell news?
It was very dramatic. So the attendees at the conference had arrived just a couple days before because of the Thanksgiving holiday and the big time difference. So the news broke as we were flying or had just landed and arrived in Hong Kong, and we were all quite shocked. We were all staying in the same hotel, including Dr. He, in fact. So there was lots of lobby and breakfast room conversation about what had happened. Was it real? How did people not know this was happening? Had he been tricking the community and not disclosing this for how long? Dr. He was part of that discussion. I talked to him very briefly. He disappeared from the hotel. The concern turned out to be he was getting death threats, apparently, and so he went to a different hotel, undisclosed. And we didn't know, nobody knew whether he was actually going to appear at the meeting and give a presentation as he was listed in the program. Up until the moment that his name was announced, pardon me. And so there was a long delay after he was asked to come to the stage. Everyone else was sitting in the audience and just walked up to the stage to give their presentation. That's what happened when it was my turn. He was not in the audience. And so his name was announced and about 35, 40 seconds elapsed before anybody showed up. And we all were wondering what was going on. And a door opened, stage left, and he emerged and strode across the stage. And there must have been 200-300 media there. And the cameras all started clicking in unison. It was one of those kinds of you were there moments. And he then put down his briefcase and started to speak from slides. For the first time that anybody had seen, he was showing the steps he went through and the data that he claimed was the result of his efforts. And people were live streaming via Twitter or posting photographs on Twitter or taking pictures with their mobile phones to capture the slides so that we could actually examine them later. It was really quite a dramatic event. After his short presentation of about a half hour, there were two members of the organizing committee of the conference who more or less interrogated him live on stage and asked him sort of the obvious, very pointed questions about why he did what he did, how he did it, what kind of informed consent there was, how he recruited the couples. And he was extraordinarily dodgy in his answers, and in fact didn't give adequate answers to any of them.
And that's not normal. At these conferences, you show up and you give these papers and you present your research fully expecting to be questioned about it and challenged about it, and you were supposed to have your ducks in a row and have your answers. I mean, people come to the conferences expecting the speakers to know what they're talking about.
And especially when there's a sort of bombshell announcement that is the content that you're presenting. Mm-hmm. He then left immediately after his session and has not been heard from since, I think, as has been reported in the media.
An amazing story. We will continue talking about it when we take after we take this quick break. It's Midday on Ethics. Dr. Jeffrey Kahn is the director of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics. More with Jeff Kahn when we come back. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org, to drop us a tweet at @MiddayWYPR, to follow me on Twitter at @TomHallWYPR. And you can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. We'll be right back.
This is your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up on our broadcast Monday, we will have a reporters' roundtable to preview the 2019 Maryland General Assembly. Ovita Wiggins of the Washington Post, Rachel Bay of the WYPR news team, and Josh Kurtz of Maryland Matters will join me to talk about the issues that they expect to occupy most of the attention of legislators when they return to Annapolis. Next week, and coming up later today, the great classical pianist Leon Fleischer. He's been playing concerts in public for more than 80 years. He's playing this weekend with the BSO, and I'll talk with him later today on Midday. If you've just joined us, it's Midday on Ethics. My guest is Dr. Jeffrey Kahn. He's the director of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics. We're talking about the explosive claim made by a Chinese scientist that he has successfully conducted human gene editing, and that twin girls with these altered genes were born last fall. To join our conversation, our number is 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWYPR, and you can catch us on the WYPR Facebook page as well. Let's go to the phones to Tim in Elkridge. Tim, welcome to Midday with Dr. Jeff Kahn.
Well, thank you, Tom, and thank you, Dr. Jeff Kahn. You might remember, Dr. Kahn, February 15th is my email to you and Joe Achenbach, pointing out that 2 years ago I had the pleasure of dining in Beijing with Dr. Yang Huanming, who was the director of the Beijing Genomics Institute. And they were selling customized dogs and pigs for about $15,000 each. Now, when I had a dinner, I said, well, what about humans? And he said, well, under the one-child policy, the Chinese are willing to spend $50,000 for genetically customized children. And he said, who wouldn't want to be cleaned up from certain diseases? And again, having been a senior scientist with the United Nations, I ask him pointed questions. And so I wrote to you and Joel some time ago in the Post, and it was published. No one has countered my my contention that this has been going on for some time now, and that China has a big advantage over us in by following different bioethics laws than the fine ones that Dr. Kahn is promoting.
Well, thanks for that comment, Tim. I appreciate it. So, Jeff, I mean, this is an international community of scientists, but there are state actors who may act in a different way. But we should make it clear, as far as I understand it, it is not allowed in China or anywhere else right now to do what Dr. Hay says he did.
Yeah. So, Tim, thanks for your call. And I think partly what's going on in the back and forth that we're having is that what is absolutely the case is that places like BGI and others in other parts of the world, including the United States, are offering
That's the Beijing Genomics Institute.
Are offering genetic testing of embryos such that people can decide which embryos to implant. That has been available in many countries in the world for a fairly long time now, as Tim has pointed out. There hasn't been, I think, the techniques perfected yet, such that people had been trying to implant gene-edited embryos. So modified embryos is different than testing embryos and deciding which ones to implant. So literally designing the genomics of the embryo that gets implanted. That's what Dr. He has done, at least by claim, and what seems to be the big the crossing of a threshold here. The question about what will happen next is a really important one, which I take to be Tim's real point. What will the international community do? What's interesting is that the Chinese government's response was not immediate. When the news broke, there was silence, frankly, from the Chinese government. And only when the international community spoke out and this conference had its reaction and the members of the conference were interviewed in the media and there was a statement from the conference organizing committee, all of which were denouncing what Dr. He said he had done. Did the Chinese government then react? So there's a little bit of a, let's test the wind here and see whether the reaction from the international community is one of congratulation. This is like the first test tube baby being born in 1978, which I think Dr. He thought was going to be the reaction and response, or as it was this sort of condemnation, which then led the Chinese government to say, there are laws that you have broken, we're cracking down, and he's now under house arrest someplace.
Yeah, well, of course, Tim's comment that, you know, why not clean up, as he said, these medical defects, and with babies that are born. We have a caller, I think, that brings up that point, because there may be more than one way to rid people of an HIV danger. Maria in Bolton Hill, welcome to Midday with Dr. Jeff Kahn. Thanks for calling.
Thank you so much, Tom and Dr. Kahn. The whole medical rationale for what was done is very unsound, because if somebody wants to get pregnant and either the father or the mother are HIV positive, you can treat the parents, and as long as they are adherent to the treatment, you can keep on testing. If their viral load is really low, that is the HIV in their blood has been reduced to extremely low levels, they will not infect the infant in utero. So this research really casts a horrible cloud, because not only are there the ethical issues, but it was completely unnecessary. And this might also put back the ethical discussion about this kind of research by many years. And there could potentially in the future be some ethical reasons for doing this kind of research if, let's say, there was some absolutely fatal genetic flaw in an embryo. But that was not the case here. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for that call, Maria. And as we understand it, I guess Dr. He has been in touch with about eight different couples. At one point he had nine, so he says, and one of them dropped out. But in these couples, only the fathers were HIV positive, so that they were already unlikely to pass that infection on to children anyway. I guess if the mother is HIV positive, it's more common. Is that right?
Well, Maria raises very good points, and we had not talked about this yet. In fact, they're often couples who face this situation where the male partner is positive and the female partner is not, go through IVF. They do use in vitro fertilization and do sperm washing. So that's a way to assure that the virus will not be passed. And that's what was done in this case. So not only did they not need to do genome editing to prevent infection of these twins, they were doing something that would prevent infection of the twins. And this was some sort of later public health kind of intervention, which doesn't make any sense, as Maria has pointed out. So there's the scientific justification is really non-existent. And you would argue, we argued with him, and subsequently there's been a lot of discussion of the fact that there needs to be some benefit to the resulting child to justify this level of risk and uncertainty. And it's certainly not the case here. And we should be talking about what would qualify as sufficient benefit to justify this level of risk and uncertainty, and when. The AP recently actually did a survey of the U.S. public asking when would it be justified, and the answer in a nutshell is fatal and in uncurable diseases only.
Yes.
And that's not the case here.
So Dr. Hayes is talking about HIV. However, as Maria makes the point, you know, there are other ways of achieving that outcome. But what we don't know is the unintended consequences of this in other aspects of these young girls' medical prognosis. I mean, there are lots of things that could happen because this gene sequence was altered that we can't predict, right?
Not only that, yes, to answer your question, but in the questioning of Dr. He on the stage in Hong Kong, it was pointed out that this mutation may make people more likely to be infected by different viruses. So it may be protective for HIV, but actually make someone more susceptible to some other infection. So we need to know much more, both about how that particular mutation affects humans, but also we need to know more about what genome editing does to the resulting individual. And there needs to be, for instance, much more animal work before there would ever be the first use in a human. This was done extraordinarily prematurely, which makes it unethical.
And there's even some concern that he may have inadvertently protected only one of the girls and made that girl's genetic makeup ostensibly superior to that of her sister, putting her sister more at risk. I mean, so there's all sorts of stuff that people don't know about and won't know about, as you say. We have an email from John who just brings up the point you just made. At what point would genetic modification of human embryos be considered ethical? What set of circumstances would make the leap to human genetic modification ethical? And that's part of what this conference was about,
yeah.
Right? It was to come up with guidelines, to come up with criteria that can be employed.
Right. There has been a series of international discussions to try to answer that question, among others. First, in 2015, there was the first international summit held in Washington, D.C., then an international consensus committee on which I served, in fact, wrote a report after about 14 months of meeting that was issued in February of 2018, which laid out the answer to John's question. The very short summary is only for very severe, incurable, and likely fatal diseases that would be 100% passed on from parents to offspring. It's a very, very small list of things, and only going forward in humans after a certain number of steps had been achieved in terms of the basic science and animal research that showed it was safe and that we understood the effects. So many, many, many more steps would have to be taken before the going forward, as Dr. Hayes said he did. And this particular mutation intervention edit would not have made it through the filter, the criteria that have been proposed and endorsed, frankly, by the international community. So he's a real scientist, but he's a rogue. He's not a charlatan, but he's a rogue.
Hmm. And what's the distinction there? Because there have been a lot of people who've pointed to the fact that he's, for example, perhaps not even affiliated with the university he says he's affiliated with, or if he is, he's on leave and he's not really working there. They have denied knowledge that he was doing this research, and he said he was just doing this on his own. That alone makes him rogue, right? I mean, you would never just, you know, in your basement start experimenting with something without telling Johns Hopkins.
Correct. So I would say the distinction is a charlatan says they're doing something, but they actually cannot do it. That's not the case here. So Dr. Hayes has been part of the human genome editing scientific community for a number of years. His PhD is from Rice University in Houston. His postdoctoral fellowship was at Stanford. And I know the people he worked with who think very highly of him as a scientist. So he can do what he says he has done. What makes him a rogue is that he has jumped way, way, way ahead and in a very premature way in the way we've been talking about. That makes him a rogue, if not a charlatan.
Let's go back to the phones to Tom in Mount Vernon. Tom, welcome to Midday with Dr. Jeff Kahn.
Yes, good day, Tom and Dr. Kahn. I have a question, Dr. Kahn, I have for you. Is a possibility that this technology could someday in the future be militarized? You could have an army of genetically altered people, and then when they go into battle, use a weapon against the enemy that your army would be immune to, but it would kill the enemy. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom, for that incredibly scary question.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom. And in fact, people have been not only asking that question, but postulating how that might play out and in whose hands would such a technology need to fall for something like that to materialize. And the answer that most people have come up with is North Korea, for instance, being interested and willing to, as you say, weaponize a technology like this. I think it's still quite a long time away from happening, in that the technique is nowhere near perfected sufficiently, not to mention we don't know what edits to introduce to create an army that was either resistant to something or more fierce or less fearful or whatever it might be. And then, of course, it takes a while for people to grow up and be soldiers. So, you know, we're talking a generation or so before this is even possible. But the fact that we're having the conversation ought to be at least a little bit scary. And I will say, in the Obama administration, I took part in conversations with the U.S. Department of State around the potential foreign policy implications of the use of genome editing, not only in humans, but in animals and plants, for instance. So that's certainly on the agenda for people to discuss.
There are a number of people who have been tainted by this event as well. You mentioned that he studied, Dr. Hayes studied at Stanford. He's got a number of American colleagues and a number of colleagues around the world with whom he has discussed the possibility of his doing this and the fact he was looking into this widely. I mean, this did not pop out of nowhere in November. I mean, he has been talking about this to some of his colleagues, and there are other colleagues now who are calling on those people to be held accountable for not slowing him down and stopping him.
And those that I have spoken to about that, and I know a number of them, mostly at Stanford, have said that they told him in no uncertain terms, this was a terrible idea. What was he even talking about? Why would he even consider it appropriate? And no, 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 he ought not do it. But there's sort of not much more they could have done than that. He went to a different country. He did not disclose that he was actually going forward. And in fact, one of the, I thought, the most apt quotes I heard from somebody was, I would never want to play poker with this guy because he's such a good bluffer. Because we all thought he was just doing this work in the laboratory and not going forward
in an ethical way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it would be in a way that would not be permitted in the United States, but that's because our policies are different. So in vitro research on human embryos is permitted, is allowed in China. It's not in the United States, at least not with public funds. And so that he disclosed he was doing and presented papers showing that he was doing it. But he didn't say the next part, which was, and I'm implanting those embryos into women's bodies in hopes of having babies born. And that's the bluffing part, right? And so I don't know how you hold people responsible for something that he did, even though they counseled him, more than counseled him, that it was a terrible idea and he better not do it.
And he says that he posted an ethical approval form for this trial on the website of this hospital in Shenzhen, in China, and I guess he thought that was sufficient.
Well, there's a claim by that hospital that they did not approve it, and so there's some concern that that may have been a forged document. There are a number of very concerning aspects. Among the things that, in my world, we're really interested in is the consent process that was used for the couples. What were they told? What were they shown? What was the information that was disclosed to them? And so there was, for a very short time, an English translation of the Mandarin consent form that I actually was able to download in that window. And I have read it through. And if I read it, I would have no idea that what he was proposing, if I was a participant, was to do genome editing on embryos that would be implanted in my body as a woman. It was full of gobbledygook in a way that would be very hard for anybody to understand, let alone people who suffer from the combination of features we've been talking about and come from a northern province in China and lack means. So there's a ton of questions about how he did it, and I would be very careful about saying there was any kind of ethical approval for what he did.
And people are... have raised questions about his work before. The journal Stat published a piece about a week ago saying that he tried to publish a paper describing other experiments, you know, that were similar, and it got rejected mm-hmm. because the peer review said, nope, this doesn't work.
And that was in Stat is a an online health and science journalism outlet. He did publish something in the CRISPR journal about ethical principles, believe it or not, without disclosing that he was doing this research. So I think there's been a bunch of red flags yeah. about this particular case.
Well, it's fascinating as always. So good to see you. Happy New Year. And thanks for coming by.
Same to you. Thanks.
Dr. Jeffrey Kahn joins us regularly for Midday on Ethics. He is the director of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics. Short break. And when we return, the great Leon Fleischer will join me to talk about his extraordinary career and his performances this weekend with the Baltimore Symphony. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.